Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pod Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. And folks, I am coming at you again from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It has been a fantastic day, a fantastic week for me here. And I think I've got a pretty good show for you. I have a brand new guest on the show. His name is Joshua Liberman. He is president of Net Sciences, which is a computer and MSP out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I think he's going to be a great guest and give us some really good knowledge. He's had a lot of interesting things happen in the last year, so we'll talk about that. I am going to also mention a couple of things. We're going to talk later about the TechCon Unplugged, our conference coming up in September. But before we do all that, I want to make sure that I give some promotional consideration to our sponsors, Freedom Voice. I'm not going to do the whole spiel, but folks, you know Freedom Voice, big champion Jason Miller has been promoting them for years. I finally got on board a little more than 6 months ago and deployed almost 50 phones now. It'll be another 27 here in a couple of weeks. I'm happy I made the decision to go with them. If you want to check them out and become a partner, head over to freedomvoice.com/partners. They will get you started. They have a great partner program. You need help, you call them, they'll take care of it, and they will help you increase your monthly recurring revenue. And you will hear more about them at TechCon Unplugged too. So you'll hear a lot about them in the upcoming months. So again, if you want to go over and partner with them, freedomvoice.com/partners. And I also want to give a shout out to our buddies over at Malwarebytes, folks. They have a TechBench partner program and a tool set which is only available to computer repair shops, MSPs. I use the tool set. I think it is fantastic. You will make your money back real quick with it. There is a promo that they are giving to PodNuts listeners. They are doing a one-year membership for only $249. $249 is $100 off of their regular price. And folks, that's a bargain even at the full price. But the kit that they're going to give you is going to include not only access to the Malwarebytes tool set, but it's going to give you a reseller pack of 25 Malwarebytes premium licenses. That'll be your starter pack to get you going for reselling. So even if you just sell those 25, you'll get a nice reseller margin. And there are other additional discounts for other Malwarebytes products on the site. This promotion is good until August 31st. Please go to the show notes at podnuts.com, P-O-D-N-U-T-Z. There is a case-sensitive URL that will take you to this promotion. If you go to their site on your own, you're not going to get it. So be sure to go to the show notes and click on the link. I'm not going to read it because it's one of those bit.ly shortened blah, blah, blah URLs, but it has PodNuts 2019 at the end. So very nice there. So be sure to go over there and support our buddies over at Malwarebytes. All right. And let's see here. I've got a couple of, you know what, I'm going to save email for another time since Matt and I just went over that on the last show. And let's go ahead and get into our interview. So as I mentioned, I have a guest that I think I've known him for a few years now. He is a part of the ASCII group that we have conversed back and forth with. He has been in the industry for quite some time. His company, NetSciences Inc., offers complete networking solutions. Again, they are in New Mexico. And I am going to do something different. Instead of me going through a big old introduction, I'm going to let Josh get on here and tell us a little bit more about himself. So Josh, welcome to the show. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing really good. Thanks, Marvin. So testing 1, 2, 3, is this doing well?
You're doing good.
Okay. Then I'm going to stick with my story. I'm doing just fine. Okay. We've been in business as NetSciences for 24 and a half years. We, prior to that, were 5 years as PC services. That was really more of a sideline than a full-time gig. I was also working full-time at that time as well. But since 96, at the very end of 95, we've been NetSciences. We started out as a system integrator, basically putting things together and supporting them. We do build our own systems, actually all the way back to day one, January 1990, I built my first server. So we've been building systems 29 and a half years, which feels like, I don't know, 30 years already. It's a long time.
Yes.
We migrated more towards from integration into systems and network management, and then without even knowing it, into becoming an MSP. In October of 2002, I started doing stuff that, pardon me, I started doing things that required remote management and monitoring, and I had no idea that that was called, well, maybe it wasn't called managed services. So right around the beginning of 2003, we had already put this together, and we'd given it a name, which was Proactive Services, and that kind of marketing genius is really what makes my name. Unfortunately, it wasn't very catchy, but we started doing that way back then, and by about 2010, we migrated to the point where everybody we work with has fixed monthly bills. By 2015, everybody's on some, actually, they're all on managed services contracts. They all have dettos in place. They all have SOC walls at the edge. So we are pretty much a full-blown MSP.
All right.
So that was a long answer, sorry.
That's quite all right. Well, when you've been in the business a long time, because I tell people, I mean, I started my business in 97, although we didn't share the same growth plan, but I'm still here and kicking it, so I'm happy about that. But I started doing stuff computer-wise, 92 is kind of when it was official with some stuff. But you actually started even before then.
Well, I got into the PC business or the PC world in about 1982. Actually, I was out of manpower. I was stuck in Bakersfield, California, having been out to do a job in the oil fields that didn't pan out. Mm. And did a bunch of, you know, terrible manpower kind of jobs for a long time. And it was getting awful hot. It gets to be about 110 commonly in Bakersfield, maybe hotter now. I walked in the door. They were unpacking an IBM PC, XT actually, and it occurred to me that I could go make about $8 or $9 an hour painting reflective paint at the bottom of swimming pools at 130, or I could do what I did, which was I said, I know how those work. They put me in a room with it for a couple of days, fortunately, and by the time I got out the door, it turns out I was telling the truth, and it ended up that I ran around setting up PCs, which had the advantage of paying more, being in air conditioning, and being largely surrounded by women, as opposed to guys sweating in the bottom of a painted swimming pool. Occasionally, we got to do some roofing, too. So you can imagine that made IT a lot more interesting and attractive to me.
Yep. Well,
that's how I got started, honestly. For years after that, I was a technical editor, writer, word processor, and I worked on mostly Wang VS and IBM OIS, I believe, systems. And I got exposed to
OIS, so IBM before VIX. You said OIS, so that was before OS2.
Oh, yeah, yeah. These are mini computers.
Because you're throwing out terms I don't think many will understand because of...
Sorry about that. They were minis. So there was... It's essentially a low-end mainframe, slightly smarter terminals. They weren't quite dumb terminals, but they were pretty close. And I did that for years, probably from 84 to 88 or 89. I was always really interested in the hardware, digging in and playing with that stuff. And in 1990, I got hired by a law firm, the biggest one in New Mexico at the time, to transfer or to transition them from running on mini computers, Wang stuff, to PC network, to design and build and bring them to the PC network. They had about 110 terminals, so they had about that many users. And they were paying about $120,000 a month in maintenance on that VS system, the Wang system, and on the terminals. If you can imagine, it was just incredible. I mean, within a few months, they had earned back all the money they spent to put in a very serious PC network. Unfortunately, within a few months, they also found less need for me, and I moved on. They moved me on. Nonetheless, that was how I really got into it. It was my first professional PC position, and I decided to get out of debt and pick up more experience and teach myself some more. And right at the end of 95, I pretty much slept for October and read books about management, business, taxes, marketing, until the end of December, and dove all in and started Net Sciences with $10K that I had from selling a car.
Nice, nice. Yeah. And so that has been a nice little nugget for you to start that way back then, because you're still here. And
it worked. Yeah. I mean, there are days and weeks where it feels better than others. But
apparently. Yeah. And just to give people an idea, so not only did you start that back then, but you obviously have grown the business. And just this past June, you had an open house out at your place for a brand new building. How does that feel?
That's true. You did your homework on that. So, yes, I actually worked out of the house all the way from 96 till 2003, brought in a partner, well, sorry, not a partner, but a part-time employee, brought that business up to about $500,000 out of the house. That was very difficult, and moved into a commercial space. And as you might guess, the business dropped dramatically for a couple of years, because it does that, or somewhat dramatically. Recovered our footing, brought in another person, stayed in that location for maybe 13, 14 years. It was functional and decent, but it looked more like a barbershop than a professional services joint. Actually, it was a barbershop in the 50s. So we moved down by the airport, and I rented a really fine standalone professional building, the front 60% of it. And just about, December, January, I found out the folks who owned it were trying to sell it out from under us and evade the lease, and that would have been catastrophic. It took a long time to find the place. So I got involved in that process, and to skip ahead a little bit, I ended up buying it and closing on February 7th of this year. And then on, I think it was June 7th, we had our open house.
And that just wasn't your typical open house, here's some beverages. You actually had a big old event. You had Carl Palachuk there. You had some talks. I believe you had a cybersecurity talk from the FBI. You had a talk on cyber insurance. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. That's not just, hey, come and share some drinks with us.
We threw a lot of stuff at the wall. We did have Carl speaking here on how do I get to the cloud. We had the FBI agent here that I'm hopefully going to be working with in the near future. That speaking on top three cyber threats, we had, I think they're the largest agency in the state. We had a woman by the name of Madeline who came in and spoke on their behalf about what cyber liability insurance is, what it does, and what it can't do for you, which is where we fit in, and hopefully we'll be working with her in the near future. And then we had chair massage and photo headshots and Nerf gun battles and catered food from one of our clients. Actually, I was amazed that the food went, I mean, it ended at 5 p.m. The food finished at 4:50. It really couldn't have gotten much better. And they showed up at 4:55, all the stuff. So that was perfect. And only about half the booze got drank. So that made everybody who visited. The really special thing was 8 ASCII members from around the country came out to visit, as well as a non-ASCII member, but a fellow in the community from Vancouver area. And a fellow who's in Mexico who is an ASCII member. So we had 10 out-of-state dignitaries or indignitaries. I had rented a block of 10 rooms, again, got lucky, at the Courtyard Marriott a half a mile away. Amazingly enough, the whole event was just under a $4,000 cost to us. And we got $3,800 covered by MDF, which is miraculous.
Nice.
Yeah. And even on top of that, it looks like we've just closed a good deal from somebody who showed up at the event on behalf of SonicWall, and they were a major donor. And we may indeed close a deal on behalf of Datto, who was a minor, mid-sized donor to the event in terms of cost. And if that happens, we not only got it covered by MDF, we made it look like there was a good reason. So it really is good news.
Yeah. So it sounds like you had like a little mini ASCII New Mexico working there.
Well, it is probably the largest ASCII event New Mexico has ever seen. I don't think there's 8 ASCII members that have ever been here before. I don't even believe there's 8 ASCII members in our state, but there might be.
All right. So speaking of ASCII, so you're a member of the ASCII group. You actually do a lot of other stuff. You are I don't want to say prolific, but you've been an author. I've seen some of your blog pages, your authored stuff on, what was it, MSP SEO Factory. You've you've been in VAR Insights talking about MSP pricing mistakes. You know what? Let me see what if I got. I'm going to pull this up here. I'm going to share my screen.
On my website, there's a link that I think it's called Press Room, and that's the only way I keep up with this stuff.
Oh, really?
So yeah, I'll go there just to see real quick what there's been quite a bit. I think that MSP Insights, Channel Pro, those are by far the most. Sorry about the phones. I'll just keep.
Sorry. Silence. Well, you were in an expert guide for IT professionals that was put out by.
Oh yeah.
APC, that's, Life is On.
Yeah, and then there was and lots of ASCII publications. There's a fair amount of stuff out there. I write frequently. And I write somewhat prolifically. As you said, I have a new series coming out. I think the newest thing will be on building the ideal security stack, which is, if I remember right, coming out in the October print.
Okay.
Channel Pro episode issue. And then I have something, I don't know. Honestly, I don't remember. I have the list of stuff, but I don't know where it's going and when. Lots of stuff soon is a fair.
All right. So you're out there, and I know that I can't remember. I think it was 2 years ago I reached out to you, and we talked SonicWall.
Okay.
Now you probably don't remember, but I had reached out to you because we were taking a client, and they were in 7 locations with a central hub at their main office that we were going to move into a data center. And we were talking about moving them and having them all work remote. And we talked about, you know, sizing, the proper sizing of the Sonic Wall in the data center. We talked about the MSA appliance and, cause the customer didn't understand that we needed protection, even if they were going in a data center, that we needed to put in the proper, RDP, RDS solution for them. So there, it was a law firm, so their attorneys could work both in the office and out of the office. Nice little discussion there, which I know you get hit up a lot about SonicWall in the ASCII forum. So,
yeah, I for sure. And honestly, over the years, I've gone from being the only tech guy here to being the second or third string. Over the years of building the business, I do and know less than I once did. Although I'm trying to reacquaint myself, and every 2 years, SonicWall makes you retest or get a new credential, which is coming up at year end for me. So I'm back on that curve again, and I'm doing much more with the SonicWalls. SonicWall and I guess Datto are key partners, not counting Intel and Microsoft, because it's kind of like saying you like water when you're a fish. But certainly SonicWall is a key player for us, and Datto has been SonicWall for 20 years. I think we will be 20 years in December, but we can almost say that 100% of our sites are also Datto sites. So 100% are SonicWall and 95% are Datto as well.
All right. So let me go back and ask a question just to kind of get us up to speed with. You've mentioned SonicWall, Datto. I know that you've got some other stuff in your stack with your offerings and stuff. But when you started to make the full-blown move to managed services, what was it about the product that you chose for your stack? What was it about SonicWall? What was it about Datto that drew you to them and made them your selection?
Well, I think that early on with SonicWall, so like I said, we're cruising up on 19 and a half years anyway with SonicWall. So I'm not going to pretend I was quite so sophisticated back then. I knew that I wanted a security appliance solution. I didn't want to start building Linux boxes and learning IP chains. And I didn't want to be, I could have DND on this phone. Sorry.
I wasn't going to say anything. Somebody will email me about it, but I wasn't going to say anything.
Sorry about that. And I didn't want to be in a position where I had to harden box and run an OS and develop SonicWall develop firewall expertise. I wanted an appliance I had seen, I believe it was WatchGuard, and I know it was Sonic Wall, right around 99. And I believe at Interop, back when it was called Networld, I ran into Sonic Wall and sat and talked with them, and they had such a simple deployment. And at the time, everything was just SPI, stateful packet inspection, which is reading of headers and looking for source and destination on packets, which we all, nowadays, that's silly. That's like a bouncer to ask you if you're 18 and doesn't ask for ID. But the back then, 20 years back, that was kind of leading edge. So I just fell into the Sonic Wall camp and started learning and studying and passing the tests. They were very helpful. We were the first, or amongst the first two Sonic Wall partners. There was another guy in town that I worked with who picked them up at the same time. So they were very good and never really veered off from them, even though we've evaluated at different times Sophos, WatchGuard, and Fortinet. Notably Fortinet during the Tudel and a handbag days of Sonic Wall, when that happened 7-8 years ago. We considered that, almost veered off, stuck it out, and I'm glad we did. It has been worth that. Of course, now they're all new things, but gosh, I think that Dell purchased was summer of 2012. God, it's a long time ago, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So they, as you know, they've been back out on their own for the last 2 or 3 years, or at least back out on their own to the extent you can be when you're owned by a venture capital or private equity firm. So all that turns around to, I wasn't very mindful and purposeful about choosing Sonic Wall. We simply fell in with them. But it's completely different with Datto. That one I thought through and tested and played with. Anybody who runs one of these businesses knows that you have to have at least 3 or 4 parts, moving parts in any relationship. The products have to work, and they have to do what they say, or at least be close, because we're in IT. They have to be sellable. You have to be profitable. You have to be able to sell them and make money. You have to have good support, because nothing always works, and even things that do work need support. And finally, the relationship with the vendor has to be good. And that means that they don't go around and try to sell around you. They don't treat you with abject disrespect. And they give you an opportunity to advance through their training and product line and be rewarded one way or another for becoming more expert and remaining loyal to them. And all those things were there with Datto in the early days, because we're now 8 years with them. So we got them when they were toddlers, like 2, 2.5 years old. When we started with them, even though 3 of those 4 things were in place, their partner program wasn't. I remember asking them if they did MDF, and they said, "What's that?" And I asked them, "Well, what about your partner tiers?" And they said, "What's that?" And, you know, the basics of partnership were new to them. The good news is they were interested in what I wanted it to be. So we kind of helped mold that. That's been a great thing. But they were always really good to work with. There's certainly money to be made. Arguably, they're pricey to place. There are plenty of places that it's very hard to place something that's going to cost $400, $800, $1,200. I think our highest end Sonic Wall ever, I'm sorry, Datto, was a $2,600 a month charge. Obviously, that's not going into a small business with a small data set. On the other hand, at $200 a month, we place devices that can snapshot a server every hour, provide failover to a work group, maybe of 10 users, and support a terabyte of data. So yeah, they're not terrible, but they're a great partner. We were very mindful and careful in selecting.
Well, that's I was the same way with Datto after going through several backup products, trying to do what my customer wanted. And the way I got into Datto is I had some law firms that had to have their data backed up, and they needed to have, you know, something local that they could get stuff right away. They needed to have cloud. We needed to have images of the servers, and looking at building the solutions back then. When I got started with them, and I think in 2015 or 14. I mean, your products were out there. You know, you could do your storage crafts and your Veeams and do that stuff and put in your own box and, you know, manage it yourself. I didn't want to do that, though. I could, you know, I needed a partner that could take care of all that for me. And that's how I convinced my customers, look, you know, yeah, I can do it. I might save you a few bucks. I may not. But you're going to need a solution that we know will work. And if by chance something does break, which they do, backups stop working for whatever reason, Datto's got 24/7 support that will, you know, remote in and take care of it for us. And another thing that actually, after I sold my biggest client to Datto, it was after the hurricanes came, and Datto sent out their little notice that they were going to send their mobile unit around.
Yeah.
Backup device. I mean, I just forwarded that to my clients and said, look, this is why we chose this company. They're going to come here, and if we need help, they're going to provide us with help. Now, we didn't need the help, but the customers were happy to know that help was there if needed. And SonicWall.
That's one of the greatest things they ever did.
Yeah. And SonicWall, just like you, I kind of fell into SonicWall as well. So back in 92, 93, 94, I was still doing the Netgear VPN boxes. Now, I was buying the business class. So that's what I was doing. And I had a customer that needed some VPN connections that worked a little bit better. And they had a company that sold them on how they sold them was, we need to put in new equipment because your lights are flashing too much on the switch. I just said, is that all I had to say to get the business? So turns out they came in and tried to do these situations and replicate data, and it didn't work. I came in afterwards and got the DFS replication to work for them, but I kept the SonicWalls in place, and I liked SonicWall once I got to learn them and use them and look at all the comprehensive services. I said, this is what I got to do for everybody. And so they're probably about 85-90% of my customers as well.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I've been very happy with them. I mean, there's a lot of competition that's good, and there's a lot of firewalls might be the single most complicated device on your network, even if you're running a Hyper-V stack. I mean, firewalls are remarkable. So there's no way you can tell somebody that only SonicWall does this, or only Sophos can do that, or only Fortinet's reliable. And none of those things are true. There's many good competitors, at least those three.
Right.
At the top end, and a tier down, there's six more. But the thing about a firewall is, as complex as it is, it's like having a native language, in a sense. I speak SonicWall, and even though I do speak five languages, I only speak one firewall. And I want to remain expert in that line. If you grow a business big enough and you can have multiple expert firewall people, I think then you do have the option to spread out. But for me, it's a no-brainer, essentially. We love dealing with SonicWall. There are occasionally profitability challenges. They are pretty well commoditized. You don't see them in vending machine at airports yet, but for a while during the Dell days, we were a little bit afraid of that.
Yeah.
It didn't materialize. But in the end run, yeah, I'm very happy with our choice with that.
All right. So I want to just quickly, because since we got into firewalls, I know that you have done a couple of things in recent months specifically on firewalls, not necessarily firewall specific, even though you mentioned SonicWall as your main line. But you were recently on the podcast with Carl, the SMP Network podcast, talking about 12 steps to securing your network. You did another session on hardening your firewall. And one of the things that I noticed, and it, you know, comes up in the ASCII group every now and then, comes up on the Facebook groups where everybody's talking about, hey, you know, what's the best firewall, but they're not really talking about what's the best firewall practice, you seem to be focusing on and trying to explain to people, look, doesn't matter which firewall you have, you got to be able to do these things.
Well, so I have, this has been kind of hot, so to speak, lately. I did a podcast, I did a couple of articles, and I actually spoke at SMB Tech Fest, Dave Seibert's thing in Orange County.
Right.
Tech Fest was just 2 weeks ago, and I did a quick tech session, 15 minutes on this, which is crazy because there's like 16 points. And I can provide you a slide deck at some point if you're interested. If you'd like, I can give you the 3-minute tour, like what titles of the slides are, and give you an idea of what is part of our standard hardening.
Well, let me do this, because on the hardening one, there was I have that.
You probably don't have the most up-to-date one because I fix it this week.
Okay.
But whatever you'd like to do.
Well, let me just, so you talked about hardening your firewall step by step, and there were a couple of points that I just wanted to ask you about, because some of these things were points where I've done a few of them. I've not done all of them, so even I can't say I followed this exactly, but there are people that, you know, for instance, changing the management port is something that I know most people don't do.
Yeah, I mean, it's just common sense. First of all, you have to be clear. If you're defending against a truly competent, advanced, persistent threat, APT, there's not much you're going to do in a consumer grade or, in a business grade firewall that will forever thwart somebody, especially if you're supporting customers who like to play a little bit loose. We don't let ours, but it's a constant challenge.
Right.
So there's some real basic stuff like changing that management port and, of course, doing all management by HTTPS. I don't know if you got the deck that includes the comment about restricting management IP addresses.
Yep, I got that.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't any reason that firewall should be manageable from everywhere.
No.
You might have to open two or three. We actually do it from only one because that's our office, a specific IP address we use. And should we need to manage it remotely, we tunnel our traffic through our office and back out through our firewall from that one management IP address. So there just isn't a reason to open that tiny little door.
It's funny. Yeah, because I have started to, since I now provide VPNs to my client offices. Now, they're not on all the time. I just activate it when I need it. And then I can activate it and go to the management port, you know, through the VPN as opposed to just out on the open internet.
Yeah. Well, so another thing that's peripherally related, if you pardon the expression, is I think you mentioned it as well. It's not really a security step per se. It's a process step. But going to the trouble of bringing in a certificate into the firewall, even though that itself doesn't buy you a lot of security, it keeps people and even your own staff from having to click through, ignore this. It kind of keeps you from getting into the habit of not reading certificate warnings because you shouldn't see any.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you about that specifically because I know that most people will buy their certificate for the domain if they're doing web servers or mail servers behind the firewall, but nobody buys it just for the firewall. So I was going to ask you to explain that in just, you know, base. I mean, I know it's going to be basic no matter how you say it, but, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
It's as simple as what I said. I mean, by installing that, you keep yourself from becoming a nerd used to and ignoring these warnings that pop up in our face. And everybody has that tendency. We get used to seeing and we click through these things without reading them. And it's just one further step you can take to make sure that you don't end up becoming your own worst enemy, honestly.
Right. And I mean, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to buy an expensive certificate. You just get a basic cheap SSL, right?
Yeah. I think we'd pay 20 for ours, but they're all over the map. I mean, they're out there at $150 and they're out there at 10 or 15. Just find a vendor that you trust and can work with and spend what you think is reasonable. Yeah, we're not buying a UCC5 certificate or something. It's just a basic.
Right. So one of the things that happened on this show probably about 2 years ago is we had this big old discussion, I'll say, because we actually got slapped on the hand by a couple of listeners because we would use the term router all the time. Okay. And it was like, oh, it's not a router, it's a firewall. No, it's not that, it's a UTM. So we went through that for a little bit. But the bottom line for me is purchasing a device that you can actually put security services on. So not just something to route your traffic, but something that is going to do the content filtering, that is going to do the botnet stuff. So you mentioned that as part of one of the steps to do.
Yeah, there's this little section on one of the early first slide actually about configuring DPI, CFS, GOIP at botnet filtering.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you 60 seconds there. Deep packet inspection, I had mentioned way earlier about SPI or stateful packet, where you just look at where a packet's coming and going. DPI is 100 times more powerful, pretty much literally, It doesn't scan just the header packet. It scans the whole packet against a known set of signatures for attacks. All the modern firewalls do this, but that's part of a package is called services. So if you buy a $1,000 firewall and you need $1,000 services, and 2 years later, you need a $500 renewal, if you don't do that renewal, you've turned your firewall into a router, because now it's not scanning the packets, it's just routing traffic. So you do have to be aware of that and stay on top of it. CFS content filtering, I used to be a real libertarian about that and decide nobody needed content filtering. Right. That was before so many effective attacks and so much good social engineering was the norm. We slather on the CFS now. We back them when we have to. Geo-filtering is really just turning off access to countries that your folks don't deal with.
Right.
Harder than it sounds, actually, because you'll find out pretty quickly that you've got customers that have, I don't know, relatives in Moldova or Belarus or places you would have never guessed. Or you'll find out that business requires access. I know people would say, we never deal with Ireland. Well, you do if you have an Office 365 client.
Yep.
And so forth and so on. And you'll figure out what you can get away with. Start out restrictive and open it up as you need to. Botnet filtering is a no-brainer to me, really safe to do. Known botnet traffic's blocked.
Right.
That's a good idea unless you make a living stealing. And even the last little thing, it's a tiny detail, but most of these firewalls have DHCP services turned on. If you're not doing DHCP through your firewall, and we don't, with rare exceptions in very small shops, turn that service off just to reduce your attack surface that way. And it seems like common sense to me, but a lot of people don't update the firmware on these, and you have to. You have to stay on top of your firmware updates.
Well, Josh, that's work. I mean, why would we want to do work?
Charge for it. So every firewall we have in the field has a monthly fee we attach to it to maintain it. It's as little as $15 on our low-end plan, and all we do is firmware updates and make sure we stay up on the security advisories. And then at the very high end, it's twice that, and those folks get everything we do, including periodic hardening and reviews. Everything but firewall log reading, which we're going to talk about.
All right. So you do a lot of stuff, and I do most of it as well. I actually follow your advice too, where we actually start locking out people on the CFS, the content filtering service, and then wait for them to say, hey, I need access to this.
It's always quick and easy, and it's rarely a commonplace thing. We do have one site where it comes up more frequently, but they have an admin, and we've given him the ability to make those changes. So generally speaking, that doesn't come up, and it's not a problem.
All right. So we don't have to go through everything there in your thing there anything specific that you wanted to mention in terms of what people miss most about hardening their firewall?
Some of what we discussed already, but so a lot of what you're doing with the firewall is making it harder to identify even that it's a firewall, much less what brand and firmware level it's at. So we do things like we enable stealth mode, I think is a sonic wall term, but
yes,
there's random IP ID and stealth mode options and even more varied in there that you can do to make it harder and harder for somebody to fingerprint the type of firewall you're running. We will also, and this is new for us actually this year, everybody uses deny traffic rules where they want to deny traffic. But denies typically provide a response, and some of these guys are good enough to use that information to help fingerprint the firewall, identify the firewall. So we've gone to using discard rules. It works the same, but there's no response at all. Lots of small businesses bridge the Wi-Fi so that they can easily print, for example, from one wireless device to a wireless printer, but easy is always bad, in my opinion, in terms of security. So you make sure that you have a segmented network. At least your Wi-Fi, a lot of us talk about heavily segmenting networks in the switches, in the firewall, in the server stack. But at the very least, what you want to do is segment off any IoT on its own subnet, hopefully even on the other side of DMZ, and segment off any printing or any Wi-Fi access from your LAN. That does mean you'll have to create a separate subnet. You'll have to create some rules for traffic. It's not as easy.
Right.
You're not going to go out and set up a firewall in 15 minutes, which you can do if you know what you're doing and you plug this up and you plug and play and walk away. But we don't generally do that. So segmenting stuff is a great idea. Make sure you use the highest level of authentication and encryption that you can. We just upgraded ours. Firewalls are so fast, we tend to over-provision them anyway, that you can get rid of, you can get away with AES 256 or 512. Triple DES is history. AES is triple DES, but you can crank that up. There's little tiny things like blocking SMTP traffic. We used to have lots of SPS servers and they had to send mail.
Right.
We don't anymore. I mean, pretty much the only thing that sends mail is notifications from devices. So we might have a UPS that sends notifications or RAID software or other things in the server that notify.
Right.
Allow traffic SMTP out from them, but not nowhere else. Use secure, well, it's not secure DNS, but it's identified DNS. All of our sites have DNS filtering. So all the DNS traffic should go out to a specific IP or block. So we make sure that DNS can't go somewhere else. So they can't get farmed or hijacked, DNS hijacking.
Right.
That's a great little thing. I think a lot of people don't bother with that. Even secure NTP to set the time safely. Believe it or not, that's a security concern. Connection limits, TCP IP timeouts. Holy crap, it goes on and on. Mm-hmm. There's the only thing I will say is that the one thing we struggle with greatly that everybody has to master, and it's so hard, is DPI SSL scanning.
Yes.
I can talk for half an hour and pretty much just depress people about that and give you war stories till the day is over, but you have to get there. You have to learn how to do it, whatever your firewall is, Sophos, Fortinet, SonicWall, and more, they do it. You have to learn it. It's not really a firewall limitation, although you need a lot of horsepower. You have to learn how to deal with certificates and how they get delivered to endpoints and what you can and can't scan. And you'll learn all kinds of delightful things about certificate stores and pinned certificates and everything else you don't want to know. Anyway, that's about it.
Yeah, that's, my head hurts. Thinking of the DPI SSL that has been fun. I think I've only got it set up at two of my places, just because it's, like you said, it takes some work.
And it'll generate tickets like crazy. I mean, if you have a site that pays for all your support, they don't get pissed. You can make some real money at this. If you're on flat rates, you are absolutely going to get into a situation where you're generating your own business, right. Your own work. Not business.
Yeah.
And it just has to happen. I mean, this, we can't dive into this on this call, but I can tell you that DPI SSL is the most important and the most difficult thing you're going to do with your firewall, at least in the near.
Yeah. We'll have to have a special show just for that.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind listening to what other people have to say about that. By no means are we expert in this, and we have turned on and off or created groups and exceptions ad infinitum for 2 years, I think 2.5 years we've been struggling, and we first toyed with it 5 years ago, but we've been struggling to get it fully deployed for years. It's really hard.
Yeah. You mentioned we're gonna take a left turn here and give ourselves a rest from firewalls. You mentioned pricing in terms of if you do the all-you-can-eat model with some of these things, you can certainly go bad. And I know that you did an article, I think it was in 2016, on MSP pricing mistakes.
I believe that. I'm an expert there.
Yeah. And I know that you offer basically three packages for your business. And I think you said, is everybody now on a package, all your customers?
Oh, yes. Everybody's on one of those packages. That's how they get defined as a client here.
Okay.
When we pick up new sites, they're not contracted with us in any way. We will go out there, do some analysis, and frequently, we're going to get into it, start them on our lowest end package. But basically, they have about 90 days to figure out where they want to land. We tend to start people at the lowest end package because we can still bill for time until we get them stabilized and secure.
Right.
And try to move them up quickly into the next package.
Right.
If you want, I can just dive into how that works.
Well, I was going to ask you first, in terms of what you're doing. I know we talked about SonicWall and Datto as your stack and some other things, but in terms of your RMM and your PSA and all of that type of stuff, how are you handling all of that?
Is our inside the wall stack here?
Yeah. Do you have one? You have multiples?
Sure. I mean, I'm happy to say we work with SolarWinds MSP, previously Logic Now, previously
GFI, Hound Dog.
Previously Hound Dog, although we didn't pick it up till it was GFI. So that's 7-8 years ago. We have toyed with others. So far, the devil we know is a little preferable. Our Autotask is our PSA.
Okay.
Started with them 7 or 8 years ago. We veered off for a few years and used the early product from Logic Now, which is now SolarWinds. It was called Service Desk, and that's kind of been sunsetted and replaced by MSP Manager. We left before it got to be a complete and good, capable product. I understand that has changed, but we had moved to back to Autotask. Once they upgraded their interface, and I could actually figure out how to open and search tickets. I mean, it was brutal before. It's much better now.
Okay.
We're much happier. So we're with AT for that. As far as other tools, I think I'm going to run down the security packages we use, and I'll talk about it.
Okay, sure.
But go ahead. What's your next thought there?
Well, I was going to say we can do that, and guess we can go ahead and talk about the packages. You do three.
I do, and I'm going to. This is the first time since I redesigned them this year that I'm going to try to do this quickly and concisely.
Okay.
Verbally. So we had three levels of service plans, and they each had a different degree of security, I guess I'll call it, assigned to them. The plans used to be called Insight, Remote Care, and Total Care. And I really thought those were darn near self-explanatory. Insight just meant that we had insight into what was happening at a site.
You thought a customer would understand that.
Yeah, well, I thought it was very clever, and it might have been clever, but it wasn't very simple. So one of my favorite phrases is there's no such thing as a confused buyer. And I confused a lot of people, but ultimately I decided that being a Marriott guy, I would go with silver, gold, and platinum. Turns out we'll need a titanium at some point.
Yes.
But we have gone with silver, gold, and platinum. It's the same idea. And those silver, gold, and platinums come with basic, advanced, and comprehensive security packages. You can be a silver and upgrade from a basic to advanced, and gold people can upgrade from advanced to comprehensive. There's no limitations like that, but essentially there are three service plans and three levels of security. Silver Care is basically a security plan only, and it includes the following. Monitoring and alerting of network issues and patching of all common software, which anybody who uses an RMM package knows is built into the RMM. So basically, that's a fancy or end user way of saying you have an RMM agent on your machine. It also includes next-gen anti-malware, which in our case is Cylance, which we work with Solutions Granted for, who's been incredibly good with us and gets us great pricing on it. We also provide email filtering, whether it's on-prem, and we still have some of that, or hosted mail, Office 365. That mail filters through Mail Protector, who is also excellent to work with. It literally fixed a bug we identified the same day, one time, and the next day, another time. Hmm. That was early on in our relationship a few years ago. So they're great. They also do no perimeter nuking. So if you deal with people who absolutely can't lose a message, perimeter nuking is a way of dropping connections from servers that are black or blocklisted as known spamming servers, which sometimes is an error. So you can lose mail when someone who's not an actual spammer or someone using a block of IPs that spammers also use tries to attach and send messages. You can lose those if the mail filtering service does perimeter nuking.
All right.
The fifth component of that service out of six is DNS filtering. We use DNS filter. We previously were with OpenDNS until Cisco acquired them. Once they became a member of the board, we decided to move on and use DNS filter. Very happy with that.
Oh, you said Borg.
Yeah. So DNS filtering is not content filtering. It might brook its own discussion, but essentially keeps you from getting in trouble by typoing things or hitting sites you shouldn't. It's just another layer that prevents access to bad sites. And it can actually prevent CNC and other command and control traffic and other things that can launch embedded attacks that are already inside your network that you don't know about. It's a great thing to do. Finally, just this year, we have transitioned away from Nova 4 and over to ID Agent to provide end user training, partly because we had some difficulties with Nova 4, partly because prices went up dramatically to the point where we could offer that end user training at the same price through ID Agent and throw in dark web alerting, which basically lets people know if any addresses on their domain have been compromised and are now for sale on the dark web.
Okay.
And I shouldn't even use the word F. If 90% of our sites were compromised the moment we started looking,
right,
that includes us. So that's our basic security package. And all together, that is what we now call SilverCare. SilverCare has access to help desk, but it's billed by the 10th of the hour. So when they need help, they pay for it. It's available 8 to 5 Monday through Friday at flat rates. It's available out of hours at double rates, but it's not included in the very modest cost of SilverCare.
Ah, okay.
Step one. Should I go on?
Well, I had a question here. So you actually will provide user training as part of your basic package. That's, I think most people like, you know, would put that up at one of the higher tiers.
Well, we did. We started that way, but nobody wanted to pay more for it.
Okay.
We wanted them to happen. So we basically rolled it down. I'm going to finish this discussion with how we migrate or change our plans, but that was part of it. At one point, that was in a higher level. It has been migrated to the lowest level.
Okay. All right.
So our next step up is called Gold Care. It used to be Remote Care. It's basically what I just described to you. Included, but thrown in, is flat rated 8x5 Monday through Friday remote help desk. So if they need help, we do it. That we don't really break out things like minor add moves and changes or even fat fingering or other user fumbling. If it's Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, within reason, it's covered.
Okay.
Don't worry about they're adding a new user. We don't worry about adding an email address. We try very hard not to nickel and dime people, and we try to make sure that 80, 90% of the time a Gold Care customer doesn't see any extra billing unless it's out of hours. They do have 24/7 access, but they pay flat rates after out of hours.
Okay.
So in other words, they pay our $160 an hour if they're calling outside Monday through Friday, 8 to 5.
All
right. It's very unusual. We actually got one call on that this past weekend, just on Saturday morning. It was the first out-of-hours call of the year, and it was because we had a thunderstorm that hit like hell, and it took down quite a few sites. We had a lot of power outages that lasted hours, and some weird stuff can happen when your power outage outlasts your power coverage.
Right.
For us, it was just a Hyper-V cluster and a SAN that didn't actually shut down cleanly. It only took 10 or 15 minutes of remote work, but it was scary to begin with.
All right.
So Gold Care is that. It gets you that help desk, 8x5, or if out of hours, you pay that flat rate to get that. It does not include on-site stuff, but it does include the next step up of security package, which is called the advanced security package, and it's a bundle of three more things, which is internal vulnerability scans and new device alerting, external vulnerability scanning, and firewall log analysis. So those three services, which make you a advanced security package user or ASP, are remarkably valuable. The internal scanning is done by a product known as Nodeware from a company called IGI. And that's a small device that looks like a NUC, Intel Next Unit of Computing, 4-inch square computer. It sits inside the network and it scans for basic stuff like missing patches, but also deprecated protocols, earlier versions of .NET, or even devices with default username and passwords, IoT or other appliance type devices. It also pops up, if there is a new MAC address on that subnet, we get an alert. That is incredibly useful. So we always get surprised.
And that's what you're using the IGI for.
Yep, IGI Nodeware. There are some limitations. They're about to come out. About to is one of those software words. They're soon to, I suspect next month, come out with a vast improvement to the device, because there's some false alerting and there's some bad fingerprinting. It'll show up as Windows XP Server 2008 R2, and there's some weird things that it does right now that they're addressing, but it's really well priced. If it goes in on our, if we add it to a SilverCare customer, because anybody at any level can add, it can go up the stack,
right?
Generates a lot of billable time, and we warn them that we're going to, first month is going to be us scurrying around catching things we didn't know about. But even in our own network, which is only 10 endpoints plus three portables, we're talking, I think we spent 30 or 40 hours tweaking stuff here. It caught a lot of stuff we didn't know about. Even operating system patching to the OSs that sit under the Axis cameras we use. So
nice.
It's amazing. And that same company provides on-demand external vulnerability scans, which should not be confused with penetration tests. Vulnerability scans are pretty lightweight. They look for basic errors, open ports, and things you really shouldn't have done in the perimeter defense.
Right.
They're not a full entry. They're not a full penetration test.
Right.
And finally, the firewall log analysis. If nobody's looking at those logs, if anybody on this call or who hears this doesn't know this, firewall logs are huge. I mean, you could tie up the eyes of an expert person for 2, 4, 6, 8 hours a day reading the logs from a 10-user network. It's huge.
Yeah.
So really nobody can do that. What's happened is a lot of outsourced SOCs, security operations centers, or SIEMs, security event information event management centers, are out there. They use machine learning and automated analysis to drop out 99% in most cases of the noise. And then 1% or 0.1% gets in front of human eyes who look for actual persistent threats or other things that you have to respond to, and they alert you to that. We use, as I said earlier, Vigilan out of Fort Lauderdale, and they've been great. They do the same deal. They place a little NUC inside our network, and they ship off securely the logs and scan them for us. So those three packages together, vulnerability scanning and device alerting and firewall log analysis, form our advanced security package, and they're part of our build care. Boy, this is hard to do.
it's a lot of stuff when you just start thinking about it, right?
Well, I'll finish quickly because pretty much everything is easy now. So Total Care, which is the top level, used to be called Platinum, is everything we talked about. So it's all the automated stuff and more. Plus, it includes on-site and 24/7 response all rolled together. We don't do this for folks that are out of our immediate area, obviously. On-site is not something we can do outside our space at this point. But that's what a lot of people call all-you-can-eat. It is not all-you-can-eat. It's a nice meal, but it's not all-you-can-eat. I have learned there are many things you shouldn't say to people, especially in the States. All-you-can-eat is one of them.
Yeah.
You couldn't be that stupid. There's another one. You don't want to challenge people. We have a comprehensive plan or a comprehensive security plan that aligns with that. Pretty much this only applies to people who are super security conscious or are regulatorily covered FINRA HIPAA types. And we have yet to place this for anybody outside that field. But that adds two-factor authentication across all devices, mobile device management, and device encryption and management of that encryption. All rolled together, that's comprehensive security, and that brings you with Platinum Care to our top level of plan. We still have optional services. We do things like data loss prevention. I know I'm going to draw a blank on this, but a few other, proximity, so that a RF token, when you move away from the machine, it'll lock it. Mm-hmm. There's various other things we can add by seat, but for the most part, actually almost entirely, what I've covered is what we've placed at our site. So that was a lot. The most important thing, and I'm actually right in the middle of writing these two articles about building these security stacks, mm-hmm. is to design these things flexibly. For example, we had to migrate from Nova 4 to ID Agent this year. Earlier, we moved from OpenDNS to DNS filter. We did migrate from a signature-based AV to Cylance to next gen or behavioral, you have to build these things flexibly enough and in a modular enough fashion that when new threats develop or existing threats intensify, you can respond. Or even more commonly in this business, when somebody buys somebody else and triples the price or change the services around on you, you have to be able to react. So I guess the best analogy, and it's a little bit ugly, but I just got to have a lovely phone call with Comcast earlier this morning because we lost two of the premium channels that we watch all the time. And now we still pay $208 a month with taxes. And then, and there's a lot of internet in that. About half of that's internet, but we pay a lot. We have one DVR. We have HD on two TVs. That's all we have.
That's it.
We have lots of packages.
Because I'm Comcastic here, man. I am all Comcast.
Well, I don't want to go too much further down this rabbit hole, but what I did learn from them when I said, why is it that my package price is a two-year deal and I can't back out, but you guys can pull out Cinemax, UHD, and others? And she said, oh, if you read your contract, and of course that's 35,000 words, you'll find out that, you know, on page 27, paragraph, our package names don't change, but the contents of the package very well might.
Translation is, we do whatever the hell we want.
Well, yeah, I mean, you bought the Screw You Platinum package, and it's got lots of Screw You Platinum stuff in it, but it doesn't have specific SUP stuff in it. It's as we see fit. So you really need, I hate to say this, but you need to emulate them in the sense that you can name your packages, but you don't name your vendors. You don't get to the specificity level that'll break you if all of a sudden you find out the firewall log analysis costs $299 a month instead of $89. You have to be flexible, and you have to be able to move and react to the market and the vendors and the changes.
Right.
So the last thing I will cover with this is that every second year, not every year, but every second year, we improve what the basics are. So when I started this structure 4 years ago, we had a certain plan. There were only three things in the basic plan, not six. And over time, I realized we've got to have more. So that second year, I added three more things. They were all optional. They were all $5 a seat. I struggled and found better vendors and got the pricing down, added some seats. And on the beginning of the third year, so after 2 years, I rolled down three more things into that basic package. Still called it basic, but it had more. And I raised the rates $5 a seat. Now, I know Carl will tell you, you never lose a customer over raising your rates. I'll amend that to say you never lose a good customer over raising your rates. But we did lose a lot of seats, none of whom were seated at good customers. Every second year, we make a little bit more mandatory. So the last time was 2018. This year in 2019, I've got on that advanced security package the three things: scanning, device alerting, and firewall log analysis. It is my goal, although I don't know for sure if I'll execute, to bring those all into the basic package in 2020 and either raise a per seat site or have a per seat price or have a site cost. For example, it doesn't matter how many seats you have for firewall log analysis or external vulnerability scans or internal vulnerability scans. So what I'll probably do is approach those clients at that low level and say, hey, we want to upgrade your security package. It's $300 a month, probably. Now, if you have a 10-user site, they could leap all the way from silver to gold care, which includes unlimited 8-to-5 Monday through Friday remote help desk for only about $450. So those sites I can approach and say, look, you could pay $300 just for the security services, but if you go to the gold care, it's going to be included and you've got help desk a little more. I really want to do that because one of the things we've seen over the years is that customers that pay for every call, we bill by the tenth of the hour when people open tickets. But even at that rate, they will put things off for weeks and months that they think are not a big deal.
Right. Because they think if they have to pay for it, well, we can wait.
It can wait. So, and by the way, that's one of the geniuses of building availability to 24/7 support, but being able to charge for out of hours. It's there. You don't have to tell anybody, nope, you can't have that.
Right.
But you can tell them, like I said, at SilverCare, it's double time. At GoldCare, it's flat rate. just by charging something for it, 90% of their out-of-hours emergencies become in-hours problems. They just don't want to pay it.
Right.
Back to this. Probably the best example I've ever seen of a customer who put something off because they thought it was small. Years and years ago, long before we did most of these things, before we were really a managed service provider, we had a nonprofit that had a small SPS server, maybe 10 users, and they had their admin take a two-week vacation. She did a couple of brilliant things. She set the administrator's password to null, so there was no admin password on the server, because she knew that that way she could, anybody had any problems, could just log in and take care of it themselves, and she didn't have to give out her password. Apparently, she
that sounded like a fantastic idea.
It was a great idea. And on top of that, I can't blame this on her, but one of her users decided they really needed wireless access. So they brought in a home wireless access point, not router, put it on the same LAN, left it open, and used no password. Actually, didn't even use WPA. So they had a null password, then they had an open Wi-Fi network, and they were a nonprofit working out of a converted home in a residential area. A couple weeks later, they noticed that it was printing wasn't reliable. And a couple weeks after that, they couldn't print. So they gave us a call finally and filled us in on, a little of what I told you. We pretty much had a beat out of the rest. But it turns out that they were now a Napster node. They were hosting 52 gigs of files, and that ate up every last byte of space on their servers. There were 0 bytes free on the C partition of their server.
Nice.
So they couldn't spool. The spooler couldn't create a temporary file, so they couldn't print. So to them, it was, we can't print. But the reality was they were hacked, owned, and on fire.
Right.
So it's really good to get people to a flat rate plan so they don't have to make that decision as to what matters and what doesn't, because they're generally wrong.
Right.
And you don't really want to give them that chance.
Mm, very nice story there. My thought was just to think, did they leave DHCP on the access point and they were conflicting, but they had much bigger problems.
Oh, no. We did have other people brought in their own AP. I'm sorry, it was a wireless router, and he plugged his PC into it, and he called us because he couldn't get on the network. And he did this because he had an iPad and he needed internet access. Now, oddly, they had managed Wi-Fi, but he was afraid to ask for the password because they might notice that he was using his iPad. Anyway, so I have an armful more. Mm. So there's a lot of these, but I don't want to go down that particular rabbit hole. Tell me what you would like to talk about that we have.
Well, I was going to ask you a quick question on the pricing, because you talked about the fact of adding a site fee. So when you do your packages, are these per device, per user? Do you do a mix of different pricing for one price for servers, one price for desktops?
Sure. So now I can say we have a mix. We started out as a per device, like almost everybody. I had a pretty complicated structure, which was desktops and laptops at one level, network and security devices, so firewalls, managed switches, another. We also had a separate price for domain controllers, hypervisors, and secondary servers, or member servers. There were 6 different levels. That's tough.
Yeah.
Refer to my earlier comment about a confused buyer. Now, at our lowest level of plan, SilverCare, which is really all automated services, we still have that structure. It's per device, and there are 6 levels. I don't want to go into the details of why, but it allowed me to structure prices such that it seemed like a low entry price to people who understand that you spend money on IT, and it let me easily upsell to the next level.
Right.
So our next level, now GoldCare, which includes the help desk, is still per device. It's a simplified price structure, and generally speaking, it comes out to be twice as expensive as what it would cost to just have the basic entry level services at SilverCare. But maybe you remember 10,000 details ago, it includes a series more security services, and in the smallest networks, actually in a 5-user network, there's no more cost to go to GoldCare than it would be just to add those 3 security services. Comes out to exactly the same, an extra few $100 a month. 10 users.
And they get the remote help desk during the day.
Right. With, you can, I guess, arguably say at no extra charge. you get to 10 users and there's a small delta, and you get to 20 users and there starts to be money. But you have to realize that people in SilverCare are used to seeing first of the month bill and an end of the month bill with billable time. And most of them use enough billable time to cover that cost delta between silver and gold if they're going to do this security services anyway.
Okay.
So in other words, if you have a site that has 10 users and you're going to charge them $300 just to go up on the security plan, but if you move them to GoldCare, it's $500, there's a $200 delta, but they've been spending that much billable time anyway. So it's a pretty easy move. I say that in the middle of trying to move 10 sites this year. Maybe I should say it should be a pretty easy move. One of the scariest things that happens is when you tell people something's a no-brainer and you watch them start thinking about that. Anyway, let's go back. I don't want to discuss pricing. For one thing, we're in a very depressed price market. We're in one of the, if not the most impoverished state. And knowing what I do, which is a lot about MSP pricing, I know that New Mexico is in the bottom third of the country, basically like rural Alabama or Alaska. So that I can't say why, but we're in the top two thirds of our market. But to me, it's not so much the raw price as the relationship of prices. So as I said, those two lower plans, which are based per device, the step up from one to the next is about a 2-to-1 step in costs. The top level plan is per user, and it's done that way because we have a per user and a per site fee we roll together.
Okay.
With a multiplier that you and I would call a PETA factor, but I usually describe that as a complexity factor, and explain to people that our stonemasons don't need quite the same level of complexity that our high frequency traders do, and they're priced differently. So that's a much more, to use the British term, bespoke pricing. You can't get a price list and figure out on your own what it's going to cost to get Platinum Care. It requires an interview, and I actually require people to start on Gold Care with the option to upgrade quickly and easily. We want experience at their site before we offer them Platinum Care. Carl likes to say, if you offer people all you can eat, and I want to say again, Platinum is not all you can eat, but it's pretty close. If you offer people all you can eat, all they can eat is your business.
Yep.
So we want to make sure we haven't brought on one of those Mr. Creosotes and offered them all they can eat. So complicated answer again. I'm really sorry.
That's quite all right. I just sometimes I like to ask people what their strategy is, and without getting into too many details or actual prices, it's nice to hear what people consider a basic plan versus a advanced plan or total care. And of course, there are still many people that they won't call it all you can eat, but it's all you can eat for their customers, because if a customer calls, they'll take care of them no matter when, no matter what, which I don't do anymore.
You have to be careful. I mean, and of course, your agreements and other documentation have to really spell things out very well. You have to have exclusions. We have a list of separate exclusions, such as litigation expense, travel, costs incurred because of customer goof. They do their own IT, break stuff. There are things that we always charge for on any plan, but they're limited. There's just about 8 of them, and we make sure that we're explicit. There's a paragraph, and I go through that with folks. Yeah, it's hard to do this just right.
It's a moving target.
I will say one thing, Marvin, that a lot of people ask me, well, what's the opening bid? How low end do you get? We don't have a bottom line number. The way I look at it is even if we walk into an organization that has one premise server and 5 users, by the time they get set up with SilverCare, those guys are going to end up spending, with a small data, which is $200 through us a month, those guys are going to end up spending $500 or $600 a month with us. So in a sense, that's our opening bid. And if they ask, well, what about no premise server? There's not much of that yet, but we do have a site fee that we apply to people who don't have an on-site server, and that's $200. So realistically, and that site fee does bring in other capabilities in terms of managing their cloud infrastructure. It's basically just manage their server in the cloud, but it's a little more complicated. So the bottom line is pretty much no one walks out the door at less than $500 or $600 a month. At that point, there's enough money flow to make it worth the trouble.
All right.
And every client entails overhead in a lot of different ways, some more than you expect. But nonetheless, that's the best answer to that.
It is interesting that there are times where the smallest customers incur the biggest expenses when it comes to time and resources. And
yeah, everybody has at least one of those horror stories where they, especially if you did somebody a favor, there's virtually no good deeds that go unpunished in our business. And, you know, we've done time and again, done things for small nonprofits that have turned out to be atrociously expensive for us. And then, you know, the next time they need something, somebody offers it for free, they let you go anyway. So anyway, that's my own different story there.
All right. Well, let's do this. I think we've covered a lot. We've introduced you. We've gone over a lot to do with firewalls and got into pricing, although that wasn't our original intent. But I told you, the show goes where it goes. And so I think this would probably be a good time to go ahead and end off this show. I'll have you back on in a future date, and we'll tackle one of those topics you love so much. Maybe it'll be DPI SSL. Maybe it'll be something else.
Maybe it'll be planning your exit strategy. Who knows? Okay. Yeah, all that right. Was great. Thank you very much for your time. It went faster than I expected it to, but then again, I'm always fascinated to myself. So thanks.
Well, thank you for coming on. And like I said, again, I think there will be a lot of people who will find interest in what you have to say and offer. We see it a lot of times out in the ASCII forum. I know, like I told you, people ask you stuff all the time. So I wanted to get you on and share some of that knowledge, and we'll get you on again in the near future. Folks, we have just finished talking with Joshua Liberman, president of Net Sciences out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Josh, I'm going to finish off some of the housekeeping stuff here. So I'm going to put you back in the green room, and then I'll chat with you after the show here. Okay.
Thanks.
All right, folks. So I want to make sure that I go back and talk about TechCon Unplugged, as I said I would. I want to say that if you head over to the website, techconunplugged.com, you'll see some of the changes that have been happening. You'll see a nice little video of Jesh Halish, who is the architect of the show. He, along with Paco LeBron, give a nice little intro there. You will see the featured speaker, Tim Conkle, CEO of The 20, on the webpage. And as I've mentioned before, over the last couple of weeks, we have done a lot in the planning committee meetings that I've attended. The speakers are falling into place. The schedule is falling into place. And when you see that, you'll see some of the topics have actually started to shape up. You'll see titles and presenters on both days, Saturday and Sunday. Sunday, folks, if you'll notice, we are going to be doing some stuff after lunch on Sunday. So if you're looking to do a quick getaway on Sunday, you might want to rethink that. There are going to be some sessions added that are going to be a little bit more technical in nature. So one of the first ones that got added is, what tools do you use for cybersecurity? And then there's three other time slots that I don't know what they are, but I think Jeff and Paco are going to give us some nice surprises for that. Again, just the details of the conference: $199 is your all-in ticket price for the event, all meals and snacks. You're also going to have dinner at David Buster's, and there's going to be a lot of discussions that you'll be involved with. I believe there's going to be some nice little giveaways at this too. So you're not just going to pay $199 and get nothing. You're going to get some great content. You're going to walk away with stuff and some product from this event. So TechCon Unplugged, September 20th through the 22nd in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And the Register Today tab is still active on the site, so there are still tickets left. Head on over there and get those tickets. And I want to also make sure to remind you once again to give some love to our sponsors, Freedom Voice, Malwarebytes. If you like what you're hearing in the show and want to support us in other ways, head over to the show notes and click on the Amazon link. There you can head over to Amazon, and anything that you buy during that session will provide a little bit of kickback commission to the show. Help us keep doing these great, wonderful products or podcasts for you. If you have anything else that you want to say about the show, good or bad, email me, marvin@podnuts.com, and follow us on Twitter @podnutspro. And I want to say one last time, thank you to Josh Lieberman for being on the show. Folks, we will see you, or you'll hear me again shortly with another great podcast soon. And until then, holla.